This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new unrivaled league, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, Ron. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good. Mikey, David, how are you boys doing?
Doing okay.
We're holding up, and you're out in Arizona. You're getting ready. You got games on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, all at 2:55, and they'll be here on the Score. You and Zach doing the games. It's so weird to be coming back from the games in Japan and then playing some more spring training games before beginning in earnest on Thursday.
Yep, I would agree. I don't know what to do. It's kind of odd. And today, so I'm headed to the ballpark here when we get off the air in a couple hours and just for the workout. But today, we're playing today. Now, I would assume, and you know, this is an educated guess, that you won't see the Cubs starting lineup playing today at Sloan Park. I hate to disappoint everybody, but everybody coming off the road, I would assume, would not play today, or most guys. Got to get some rest. And then maybe play one game. If you're an everyday player, play one game this weekend and try to get yourself back on track. Very odd situation. I would be very conscious of how guys are feeling in these next 3 days before you get the season started next week.
Well, it's unprecedented, so there's nothing to rely on for previous experience. Mm-hmm. So I think we're all kind of curious about how this will affect the progress or the typical rhythm of a spring training, because this interrupts that, Coombe. So I just wonder, what would you do if you're a player? If you're a guy who is, everybody loves to get into routines and rituals and protocol. If you're a Cub regular, say Dansby Swanson, maybe Ian Happ, a guy who's an everyday player,
yep.
Do you start over? Do you come back and try to fight through? What's the best approach, you think?
I've said this. If this were me, I'm not speaking for them, but if it were me and I was a veteran player, an everyday player on this team, I would come back. I would talk with the manager, and I would say, I will come out the next 3 days. I'll take my batting practice. I'll run around, take my ground balls, play a little catch, keep my arm in shape. And then after a couple hours, I'm going home. And I'd like to go home, and I'd like to sleep, and I would like to do that again the next day. And then maybe on Monday or so, I would like to play a game again and then just open up the season. You've played enough baseball, so your skills are honed to the point where that's what they're going to be going into the season, the regular season. But I think it's more important to get back on your normal schedule of life and sleep schedule than it is playing a spring training game. So I would be going home as early as possible from the ballpark, and I would be trying to get as much rest and sleep and try to get myself back on track as I could.
So, Ron, we saw a couple of roster moves. The Cubs optioned Jordan Wicks and Eli Morgan to AAA. That really has as much to do with the fact that they have options left as anything else. With Wicks, anyway, I'm just curious, you know, they don't have a lot of left-handed bullpen help. I would imagine he will be back. I would imagine that this is kind of one of these ongoing situations as you kind of go through players, etc. Were you surprised that those moves were made, or do you understand they still have cuts to make?
No, I wasn't surprised. I didn't know about Morgan, but I did know for Wicks that the decision, whoever that was, and I don't know about Wicks, but the decision to send somebody to the minor leagues, and he's the young guy, so, you know, it's right. kind of on him, I guess. But you want to keep those guys stretched out. You can't send them to the bullpen, Mike, and think, okay, we're going to do that. And then 3 weeks later, we need a spot starter. We need to start because the guy breaks down and he's going to be out for a month. And now you think you've got a starter because you've got a bullpen guy now. And what that does is it goes back to looking at Caleb Thielbar as a veteran lefty that you signed this winter and says, you know, to me, you're looking at a guy that you can trust. He's got good stuff, and that's going to be our lefty coming out of the pen.
So, Ron, when you look back at all that happened in the two games in Japan, and you realize that the guy who didn't really get a chance to go to the plate was the guy who was your best hitter in spring training, Gage Workman. What does that, if anything, say about the Cubs' belief that he will be part of this roster? And knowing the implications of that because of the Rule 5 rules, how do you think that they'll handle the situation?
I'm not sure. You still got days left before you got to come up with your final roster, David. So I think that situation is still to be determined. Mm. He went to Japan, so you know that they feel very strongly about him. To me, if I were the manager, I'd keep him. But you know, you got other factors in play. He's had a great spring, but that final decision, that final roster spot is still to be determined. But, man, that kid has had a great spring. He really has. And he's checked every box for me. When he was playing the middle infield and he turned a double play before the team went to Japan on a close pivot at second base. So it wasn't just a routine pivot. It was a close pivot at second. He gets the double play, and that was as smooth as could be. I went, wow. That's a 6'3", 220-pound guy that can run. That's making a pivot at second and second baseman. You know he can hit. He can steal bases. Now he can play the middle of the diamond. He checks all the boxes for me.
And, you know, two things about the roster and what's left. Nico presumably is going to be added to the roster. So that means someone's going to have to go. And I'm not saying it's Gage Workman, but there will be someone that is leaving the roster. We know that. And then the other thing is with Brad Keller, it's my understanding he has an out option if he doesn't make the Major League Ball Club. So you could bring him back, but you'd need a 40-man spot. That would mean that you would have to make a move, and it would probably be Ben Brown back to Iowa, where you could leave him stretched out, etc. But I just don't know how complicated those final two moves on the roster are, one with a position player and one with a pitcher.
Yeah, the pitcher one, I would think you're really trying to figure out who, you know, if you want to keep a guy, how do you keep him, right? And then figure out that 26th man. It's a difficult decision. Ben Brown brings something to the table. Like, he threw three innings in that game, 2 2/3. And, you know, that's the first time he's pitched since all this injury stuff with his neck and things, Mike. So that shows me that they get a lot of confidence in that guy to pitch extended innings. I would think you're probably leaning towards keeping Ben Brown. And his stuff, I can understand why. You know, the other issue that the Cubs have right now is with that final roster spot, if you have a day or two or three days where Pete Armstrong tweaks something, who plays center field?
That's a good question.
That's the other big question.
That's a big one.
Ron, you know,
right? So
yeah, you go ahead, finish that thought because I think
please do. Go ahead, David.
No, you mentioned PCA. He was having a great spring. You look at the Cubs overall before they headed to Japan. It was a good spring. There were good things happening. I just wonder, you know, the people that watch those games and frustrated at the 0-2 start and not hitting with runners in scoring position and being drawn back to last year. And they were tough games to watch. You got up early and you were kind of disappointed. Does that really trump anything else that happened up to that point in spring training? How do you balance those two competing forces, the optimism that comes with spring training. The Cubs were looking good with the disappointment of them returning from Japan 0-2.
Well, you're playing the best team in baseball for the last few years, maybe last 10 years. So they've got this understanding with their roster of how to win and how to do things, little things right to help you win, especially on offense. And the Cubs, to be honest, they didn't play clean baseball. So that's why they lost. You know, you have walks to the number 9 hitter in front of Ohtani multiple times. You can't have that. That's not going to work. You have some mistakes being made on defense. When you're playing the best team in baseball, you can't make those mistakes. The Cubs did. The Dodgers really didn't, and they won. The Cubs have had a great spring. I really believe that, and they're a very good team. So you played the best team, and a couple plays cost you both games.
This is not going to be a popular question, Ron. Just prepare yourself. So the Cubs trade Cam Smith for Kyle Tucker. They trade three players, and one of them is their prospect, Cam Smith. And he is killing the ball in Houston. They're talking about starting the season with him as their right fielder. They've moved him to the outfield. He's just hitting everything. And so he's like winning the Grapefruit League by himself. You know, they're talking about Rookie of the Year stuff, etc. And you see him hit, and he's got this unbelievably, like the noise of the bat is incredible. And he's got this sweet swing. And then you look at Matt Shaw, and I don't know how to ask this question correctly, but he has about as unorthodox a way of swinging as I may have seen. He's kind of on the top of one toe, and he's turned his rear end one way, and then he kind of makes some contact, but the foot sometimes lands on the side. It's just a very strange swing. Generally speaking, would you prefer a guy that could swing, and I'm going to use the term normally for a lack of a better term.
Right.
But like
more
kind
orthodox,
of with
right?
the, yeah. yeah more orthodox more of a because I know this is not connected, but I think of Paul Edinger was the kicker for the Bears who did this little corkscrew thing and no one else ever did it. And I remember talking to the special teams coordinator when this guy went off the boil, they didn't know how to fix him because they'd never seen anyone that had that style. Does the same thing come into play when you're talking about a hitter? When someone has an unconventional style, is it harder to fix that than a free-swinging guy?
I would think, in general terms, I would say yes, Mike. I would say with Shaw, I would say no. As a hitting guy and somebody who has talked about hitting and been with, you know, people that have been great hitters and great hitting coaches since, you know, I was 20 years old in the minor leagues, he's unorthodox, but it's not something that's over the top. He pigeon toes his front toe in to keep his front side closed. That's just a trigger for him. So that, even though it looks kind of strange, if you went back to 1975, that wouldn't be all that strange. You know, you had a lot of guys, the George Hendricks, and a lot of guys who hit with a real closed stance. So that part is okay to me. The hovering of his foot when his foot comes up, a lot of guys have hit with a leg kick. You know, and the guy that I always try to tell people about, if you want to watch a great leg kick hitter, was Harold Baines. Harold kicked that leg up, hands went down, hands went back up. The key is getting your foot back down, the front foot back down on the ground early, so then you can recognize the pitch. So even though he looks a little unorthodox and he's closed, it's not as crazy as you might think. And there's just certain keys. Getting his front foot down will always be something that he's got to be concerned about. Getting the foot down before you recognize the pitch and you start to attack the baseball, that's going to be a huge key for him, like it is just about every hitter. So I would say for Shaw, it's not that biggest concern for me as a hitting guy. I look at it and go, well, yeah, it looks a little different, but still the same issues that all hitters have.
Okay, now do say Suzuki Kuhn, because did not like what I saw the first two games. What's wrong? What's going on? He'll be fine.
Hold on. Can I get some more coffee?
I'm sorry, Coom. This is tough. It's been a long week, man. It's been a long week.
But, how was the Kansas in what was the Kansas and Arkansas game? I watched that yesterday. No. Suzuki's fine. I watched them all spring. He's fine. You know, the biggest thing for him is he's got to stay on the pitch away. They're going to pound him away and force him to hit that ball away because he's so strong on the ball inside that he's going to have to hit the slider away. They're going to pitch him in and, you know, pitch him inside for show and go outside to try to get him out. And that's just the facts. That's what they're going to do. And until he hits that ball away regularly to right center or is able to do damage to the middle of the field, which, you know, big power hitters can do, where they can cover that outside corner and drive it to the middle of the field, he's going to have to show that. That's just the way it is. And when they make a mistake inside, he's going to make them pay. But right now, the Dodgers did a good job of pitching him in off the plate and then staying away from him. And he's got to make that adjustment.
Yeah, I got to tell you, it was frustrating because the 2, 3, 4 hitters, you know, everything that you saw out of that, it was just not good enough. And I think that, you know, you came away from that series. Again, they're playing a great team, great pitchers, but they didn't score enough runs and they didn't hit with runners in scoring position. And it was almost like a continuation of some of the issues we saw last year.
I would agree. I don't disagree. That's what you saw. It's the one thing we did not see this spring all that much. You saw it a little bit, but not nearly as much. You got a lot of big hits. The other thing about spring training that you got to remember, too, is the Cubs have won a lot of games, but a lot of the games are won. The young kids really played well. Mm-hmm. So you're really expecting them to do a – Pete Armstrong had a huge spring. So some of the young guys that you're counting on, Michael Bush, all these guys, they're going to have to perform now that the lights go on. And, you know, I expect them to be honest with you. I really do. And I think Shaw, until he shows he can't hit in the big leagues, you got to leave him alone and let him hit. He's hit everywhere he's ever been. I don't feel like all of a sudden now this style thing is going to change and it's not going to work. I think he's going to hit in the big leagues also. I really do.
All right, Coom, I want to finish
on the young guys got to do well.
I want to finish on a positive, though, so we can agree on two things. Number one, Matt Shaw's base hit was not a single. It was an error. I think, as you point out, you have the gloves for a reason. You need to make that play. And number two, Ohtani's home run was a double. It was not a home run. It did not go out of the park.
Are we trying? First series? We're butchering it up already.
I know.
We didn't even get out of the first two games, and we'd get two decisions. Got them both wrong. Come on, Major League Baseball. Let's get a one-hopper to the pitcher. That was like Olivia. The 12-year-old kids, if I go to Clarence Little League in Chicago, my old Little League, we make that play. I'd be mad if I didn't make that play at 12. I mean, come on. What do we for poor Matt Shaw, do you want that for the rest of your baseball life to be known as your first hit? Throw it back like a fish. Throw it back. Let's try again.
I agree.
Don't bring up fishing. All right, Coom. Thank you, buddy. Great stuff.
See you, Coom. Have a great weekend.
You too, boys. Yep. Take care.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Okay, here we go, sports fans.
Afternoons on the Score.
We will talk a little bit about Spiegs' favorite commissioner.
The last time I made news with you, it didn't go that well for me, is my recollection.
Was that when you canceled the All-Star game in Atlanta?
Yeah. Rob Manfred has enjoyed his trip to Japan.
Rob, you came here. Well, what's been your favorite non-baseball part of the week?
I'll tell you, I went to a place this morning that people were talking about for pancakes. Sounds like an odd thing to do in Tokyo. The pancakes are about that thick, and they're the most unbelievable things you've ever
really
eaten.
Really?
Yeah.
Pancakes in Tokyo.
I'll show you a little picture afterward. It's pretty good.
Never had a pancake I didn't like.
Yeah, well, these are special. They really are. So but it's been fun.
Kill me right now.
I don't like it here. I've decided not to stay.
It's legit just a cake.
But, you know, pancakes are great, though.
Where's Pancake's house?
What?
We stop at Pancake's house.
What are you, nuts? We have pancakes for breakfast. Gotta go to a place where I can get a shot and a beer and steak, maybe. Not more. pancakes. Come on.
And note to Alex Cohen, if the commissioner shows you a picture on his phone, take his phone and run.
Asking for a piece of metal back.
See how many texts from Jerry Reinsdorf he's gotten?
It's probably just all golf instructional videos, really.
Underrated from Alex Cohen in that cut.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, I'll show you a little picture afterward.
The texture says, you did not need to specify favorite non-baseball thing. We all know who he's talking to. Favorite thing in Japan is not baseball.
Come on, Tom, say it with me, you pancake eating...
The pancakes are about that thick.
God.
His pancakes.
Pancakes.
Games. Blouses.
After it was all over, he took us in the house to serve his pancakes.
Pancakes. I'll show you a little picture afterward.
The official adventures of
Spiegel and Holmes. Afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score.
We thank you so much for hanging out with us. Spiegel and Holmes Show, we are here with you until 6 o'clock. 12 hours ago, people were waking up to see the final game of the Cubs and the Dodgers out in Japan. It did not go well. It didn't go well for the Cubs, and we have been discussing that throughout today's show. People have been very angry at the Cubs, even though it's only the second game of the season. Spiegs has got some strategery to talk with you about inside of this, and there was a lot of cool moments that happened in Tokyo, too.
Yeah, man. You know, I loved having this as a unique way to start our season. It's a bad taste in your mouth if you're just thinking about it from a fan perspective. Obviously, when you lose two games, you wait for all these months and you get two games, and they were the duds that they were, largely, offensively, and Justin Steele was bad today, and Ben Brown's one bad inning yesterday kind of crushed you. So, and there was some sloppy ball yesterday. They played cleaner today. How about John Birdie today?
3 for 4. You said he wasn't going to be in the lineup.
I thought they were going to take him out of the lineup and maybe give Vidal Bruján a shot. Bruján got into the game as a pinch runner in the ninth inning. But John Birdie's a pro, man. He's a good, solid pro, and he came back with a real good day offensively and made a bunch of good plays defensively as well today. So that's a nice piece for the bottom of the roster. And so, I mean, overall, it was fun, though, wasn't it? Did you do yoga again this morning? Did you have yoga and baseball?
No, today it lined up really well for me because I was able to catch up right before I leave for the gym. My gym opens at 7. So I was able to get to the gym and watch innings 7, 8, and 9 on the elliptical. Perfect.
Oh, there you go.
Perfect.
We woke up early and stayed in the bedroom this time instead of like setting up everything in the living room like I did. But just, you know, sat up, leaning against the wall, watching baseball and just enjoying it. And I chose not to live tweet this morning. Just have some coffee time, relax. Then about 7 o'clock, she said, I think I'm going to go back to sleep. So I watched an hour of baseball with the wife sleeping.
That's beautiful.
It was lovely. It was like, I mean, it's like the options that you have with the early morning baseball are very, very different. I guess you're allowed to sleep during games any time of day. Does this check out?
Well, I think it's a different conversation. Steen has lost her meatball status. This is 2 days in a row now that she did not participate through the whole game. Yes. A very special showcase of Cubs baseball.
Do you think that maybe she wasn't feeling it because it was international? That it doesn't feel right to her? Because
she does hate Japan, right? You've said that multiple times.
Not historically, no. No, I don't think so. I think she's just, you know, maybe she's not really feeling it yet.
But that's what I mean, that it doesn't feel the same. Like her body clock might even be off on this. We're a week early.
Yeah.
We're a week early on this.
And she's a home opener girl. Like, that's when it really kicks into high gear. That Friday, April 4th is going to be a thing.
I know I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, right? So, I mean, you got... yeah. The old 120 start.
Stretch out a little bit.
Just relax.
Watch another episode of Star Trek you come in.
She was laughing at me because I got agitated a couple of times during the game, you know, just because like, oh, come on, man. You can't. What are you doing? Come on, you got to do more with
See,
that.
See, here's the thing. I think that you're flexing a muscle.
Uh-huh.
You're the host of Hit and Run. You're a baseball guy here. Mm-hmm. So you thinking critically about things that are happening inside of a game, you're getting all of that stuff back. Like, you're getting all that muscle memory back because you're the guy that has to sit here and talk about this stuff.
Sure.
I think that you're dragging a lot of people along for the ride that are just mad. That they're mad because the Cubs lost. See, you're not mad that the Cubs lost.
Not even a little.
Because you get it.
Because it's two games.
Exactly.
And and you're playing the Dodgers. And you're also playing in this convoluted, weird-ass schedule anomaly in the middle of spring training.
Well, you're going to go back to spring training for a week.
When you zoom out, Lawrence, it's absurd. And you're not going to complain about it if you're the Cubs because it's an incredible trip. It's a wonderful trip. It's a great showcase. It's all of those things. And I'm sure the Dodgers aren't complaining and they won the games. But the truth is that both teams, what a weird ass thing to do to your season.
It's very strange.
Isn't it? It is a weird ass thing.
But it is worth it.
It is totally worth it.
I want to just share this with you.
Please.
Okay?
Please.
Because I asked a friend of ours who was there.
Okay.
And I said, could you come on and talk about this? Because I saw that you were at the game.
Okay.
And this person said, I hope you're doing great, buddy. That game was tough to watch last night. It was the same damn thing we saw all of last year.
Signed, Rodney Pete is dead on.
He is. Signed, Nick Friedel.
Oh, that's phenomenal. I love that Friedel was there. And he's like, and Friedel is like, a really thoughtful level basketball head.
Baseball meatball.
And you need that in your sports life. That's amazing. All right, Tanny with the Rodney Pete reference. I don't know if anybody saw who went over to try and get it. It was Muncy.
Yep.
Max Muncy went over to try to get a pop-up, and he jumped up against the netting. And some dude had his glove and reached out and made a sweet one-handed catch of a pop-up that was foul. He didn't take it away from Max Muncy, but he made a sweet catch and immediately put his hand behind his back, and he looked slick doing it, and it looked funny, and it was entertaining as hell. And we found out later that was former USC and Detroit Lions quarterback Rodney Pete. That's amazing.
Down on Jump Street.
The way that Muncy looked at him, like, damn, you just took that ball away from me. No, brother. That ball went right past your glove and into Rodney's below yours.
It's true. He looked like
he missed
pissed.
The ball.
Yep.
Do you think Max is going to be like, oh, that was Rodney Pete?
Probably not. He's kind of a red ass.
Yeah, he is.
Well, I asked in the group thread. It was Holly Robinson, his wife, there. And so I couldn't see on my phone. And then she's there. You could see in the video.
Oh, my God.
She's sitting right next to him.
I love that.
That is phenomenal.
I love that.
Shane, please put Rodney Pete in the Slack. In the producer Slack.
I did this morning.
I love it. I love it. I want to talk to Rodney Pete. What's he doing over there? Is he a baseball guy? He just go over for the game?
Wait. No.
He's a sushi chef.
No. I think I remember this. I believe their son works for the Dodgers. I think that's the story. I think that's it. That their son works for the Dodgers.
He's a clubhouse attendant and he's got autism.
That's what it.
Yeah,
I remember. I think Rodney told Dan and I that story. We had him on maybe last year, and I think he told that story. Maybe I saw Holly talking about it.
That's fascinating.
Yep,
that's really cool.
I hate to take the mood down, but I do want to let people know because we do try and do a service here. I'm watching Channel 9 along with other stuff. There's been a tornado warning issued for Will County, so. Be super careful if you're listening to us. Go downstairs if you're in Will County. Tornado warning, not watch. So someone's seen a funnel. So just be careful out there and just go to the safest place in your house if you're in Will County.
And you can bring us with you. We'll hang out and we'll keep you distracted or entertained and or informed as well. Along the way. Yeah, that's scary stuff. You were right. You called it, man. You looked outside when it was like 11 p.m. dark at around 3:10 here downtown.
Scary.
It looked freaky. You're like, that's some of that tornado-ish. And it turns out as it's moving around and bouncing around, it is manifesting in Will County. One other really cool sighting in Tokyo to make sure people saw. Kerry Wood and Mark Pryor together. Mark Pryor, the pitching coach for the Dodgers. Kerry Wood, obviously Cubs ambassador and Cubs Hall of Famer, was there. And seeing them together, the pictures have gone a little bit viral, but there's also like a 30-second video that Marquee posted of them just hanging out and talking and then like posing. And it's just, it's really cool. And when you think about how much promise there was for that pairing in 2003 and the whole thing, it was with Zambrano, who had the longest and best career as a Cub of all of them. Matt Clement also there. I mean, there was a lot of big time arms and big time promise. And 2003 obviously was what it was. Then 2004 was one of the ugliest things ever. But Wood and Pryor is like, because there was a moment there, they were on the cover of Sports Illustrated together. Yes. I mean, like, there was a moment there where you're like, it's possible that there's a little bit of a Don Drysdale, Sandy Koufax thing happening
here.
There
are two aces on this team.
Yeah. You know, like, and I've thought about them a lot through the years, because to me it was like Pryor was the artist and Wood was the flamethrower. And I remember I've thought about them sometimes when I have two guitarists on stage with Tributosaurus, and one of them is just like playing blisteringly fast and is all chops, and the other one has a little more touch and technique. I've made the Wood and Pryor corollary to the two guitar players because I'm a weird guy like that. But like, it anyway, they left a mark on our psyche as baseball fans, that pairing, in a lot of ways. So it was cool to see them reunited.
I always like seeing Mark Pryor kind of pop back up, and you see him like work his way to the point where he's now the pitching coach for the Dodgers. And I always get excited to see him out there still doing something that he really loves, which is being involved with pitching. And anytime you see either one of those guys, but especially both of those guys, you think about what could have been. You think about how it was set up with him and Wood and Zambrano specifically, like those three guys.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, man, the Cubs are going to be set for a decade.
Right.
Like their rotation is set for a decade with those three guys. And it just, one would get injured and then the other one would get injured. And sometimes they were injured at the same time. Meanwhile, Zambrano's going out there hitting home runs.
Yep.
And all this stuff. What did Zambrano finish with, like 20 home runs in his career?
Something like
which
that.
Which is ridiculous. It just,
and pretty damn good pitching stats.
Underrated. It was a 3.8 ERA for him career-wise.
It's a pretty damn good career.
Yeah.
It really was. And you thought that
3.6 career.
Woo, boy.
3.6 career and, ooh.
Man. Wait, a 3.6 career ERA. And he could have been a lot more than that. But you can't predict that it's all going to hold together. Sometimes the solar garlic starts to rot and you're wondering, was it for this, my life, I saw it? Like, maybe so, maybe not. It's like it all just, it doesn't coalesce and just keep going.
Zambrano sometime. Was a career 44 WAR.
24 homers.
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
And then the last thing I wanted to mention on the Cubs is just how difficult the early schedule is. They easily have the most difficult schedule in April of any team in baseball. And in fact, their April schedule is on paper more difficult than any team's schedule for any month of the season.
Wow.
They get the Dodgers as they just started, and they're at Arizona.
To start things off in the domestic.
Uh-huh. A little break with the Diamondbacks, but then the Padres and Texas at home, then at the Dodgers, at the Padres, Arizona at home, and the Dodgers again. They play the Dodgers all the times they will for the whole season. April 23rd is the last one. After that, they have the Phillies at home. And so you could look at Sunday, April 27th as a demarcation point because they go to Pittsburgh after that. But then there's more. There's three at Milwaukee. Then they have the Giants. Then they're at the Mets. So I look at Sunday, the 11th of May, at the end of that Mets series. That is 42 games in.
Is that Mother's Day? So we're going to make Mother's Day a point in the season for us? Because usually it's Memorial Day, 4th of July, and then Labor Day are the days that you look at on the MLB calendar. Let's put Mother's Day on the Cubs calendar this year.
That's a really good point, because usually it is 60 games and Memorial Day is what you think about. But I think seeing where they are after 42 games when they're done with the Mets, like if they're anywhere close to 500,
you feel great about it.
You feel great about it. You should, because it gets way easier after that. It's Miami and then the White Sox and then Miami again and then Cincy and Colorado and Cincy and then Washington. And it's like their May is way, way, way easier than most other teams' May. So their April's ridiculous. 42 games, the 11th of May. If they're at 500 on the 11th of May, you should feel pretty good as a Cubs fan.
Keep that date in mind. We need to take a break, but when we come back, Flula Borg, the delightful Flula Borg, is going to join us as our correspondent from Germany to Japan.
You're putting it all together.
I know that this is exactly the type of stuff you like to talk about. That's next here on The Score.
Now it's 0-1 to Shaw. And the pitch. Swinging a bouncing ball to the hole. It's short. The throw goes to first base, and it is in time. And the ball game is over. The Cubs, are they going to challenge that call at first? I'd be surprised if they didn't. It was a bang-bang play. The shortstop, Rojas, made the long throw across the diamond, and it looks like the call was the correct one, and this ball game is over. As Shaw bounces out to the hole, it's short. 6-3 on the final play, and the Dodgers win each of the first two games of the regular season.
Certainly not the way that Cubs fans pictured the season starting, but certainly, well, one of the ways that we thought it could go, to be honest with you. Bernstein and Harris with Layla Rahimian on The Score, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Let's get back to the top of the hour, top of the morning to you. Because if you were up dark and early at 5:10 watching this thing go down, it was disappointing for a second straight day. Layla, the Cubs scored some runs, multiples, today, but they lose 6-3. They're still looking for their first home run after two games. Meanwhile, Justin Steele gives up belong bombs. The Dodgers end up with Tommy Edman hitting the first home run of the major league season. Then Kike Hernandez and Shohei Ohtani follow suit. It just seemed like the Cubs were overmatched. And for me, it was just a reminder that not only are the Dodgers the World Series champion, but for them to do what they did to the Cubs in a two-game set without MVPs, Mookie Betts, and Freddie Freeman, a couple of future Hall of Famers, they're that much better than the Cubs, and who knows who else, but you kind of have to dial it back and understand the Cubs just need to get in the tournament to have a chance at winning the tournament. That's got to be the way that Jed Hoyer and company are looking at this.
Oh, it has to be. And I think if you've heard what they've said about it the last couple of years, that is. The Dodgers are the standard bearer in baseball. Can't argue with it, can't question it, based on the resources, based on the money they're spending on their teams. It's so far and away from what the Cubs would want to spend. But you see the money on the field, and you can't really argue with that. Look at the depth. They're able to withstand losses like that. The fact that they have two of those losses, and it doesn't matter. If on a Cubs team like that, it would be catastrophic. Yeah, how would we talk about them moving forward if that were the case? But when you're trading for Kyle Tucker, when you trust Michael Busch with batting cleanup, when you decide you're going to pinch hit for him twice, these are decisions that you've made. The good news is we saw Dansby Swanson really show some life to his bat. The defense is there. But you really see perhaps that core surgery that he had paying off now that he's finally healthy. We saw hard contact yesterday. We saw a triple today. It was nice to see. So I think when you consider those things, there are progress. There's progress that was made. Matt Shaw cleaned up his defense. That's progress that was made.
Got his first major league hit, depending on who you ask.
Yeah, Ron Coomer and Pat Hughes did appropriately question it. You could hear that this morning on The Score. There is a replay later tonight if you guys missed it. It's at 6 o'clock. So if you guys want to hear the Tokyo game against the Dodgers through the eyes of Pat and Ron, you can. And I think it's important to also note, Matt Shaw's going to get his hits, but do you necessarily want him batting fifth right now if he's going to take some learning cues from everybody
no,
else?
No, I don't. Just answering your question, no, I do not. You know, Roky Sasaki,
making his big league debut, 23 years old. He looked like he was a little overamped in front of the home Japanese crowd. Three innings. He only gave up one hit, but he walked five.
Yeah, you could tell he was struggling.
Meanwhile, Justin Steele, this is not what you wanted for if you're the Cubs, thinking, okay, to stay in this game, limit your mistakes. He pitches four innings, gives up five earned on five hits, walks one, strikes out five, but the home runs were huge that he gave up to Kike Hernandez and also to Tommy Edman. In fact, Steele just was not sharp enough to win a game like this against a team like this. Here he is talking about the Dodgers' outing after the game.
Body felt good, you know, felt good overall, made a few mistakes, got punished for it, pitched to Kiki, was supposed to be a fastball outside, pulled it across the plate, did a good job of putting the barrel on it, and then Tommy Edman, fastball at the top of the zone, there was, had a few chances leading up to that 3-2 pitch to get the result that I wanted, and once he got 3-2, he probably had a pretty good idea of what was coming, and he put a good swing on it as well. Yeah, just home runs kind of hurt me tonight. But overall, felt pretty good. Felt really cool to pitch here in Tokyo. It's something I'll never forget.
So
I appreciated him saying that because I rewound. I was watching at home. I rewound that play a few times, the pitch to Kike Hernandez. And you could argue that he could have gotten a strike three call prior to that home run. We know with the home run to Shohei Ohtani, the calls were not going to be in the Cubs' favor. That was pretty egregious. I think it's fan interference, you don't. But getting back to the home run piece, or the home run piece of this when it came to Hernandez, you could tell Carson Kelly was framing low and outside, and then it was up and closer, and that's why he put a good swing on it, and he knew what to do. He's going to take advantage of your mistakes. Savvy player. We see that with the Dodgers.
Savvy
team. That's what they do. It's exactly. That's what they do. You cannot give them extra outs. You cannot give them extra pitches.
There's a reason they've won 11 NL West titles in the last 12 years and averaged 99 wins a season while doing it. I mean, that's outstanding. And you get what you pay for sometimes. And the difference in the payrolls obviously is something to be seen. But really, when you look at this game, these two games, the series, Craig Counsell may have summed it up best when he pointed out the biggest difference between the Cubs and the Dodgers right now.
I think we did a better job tonight. I think offensively we had, you know, pressure, especially innings like really innings 2 through 5. I thought we put quality pressure in 9. So we put pretty good pressure on them. You know, we hit 6 singles, they hit 6 extra base hits, and that's kind of the difference tonight. Our base hits, you know, they did damage with their hits. We had traffic, but we're missing that damage hit to kind of put some runs on the board.
Yeah, you need extra base hits against the Dodgers. You probably are going to need more than 3 runs most nights, also against the Dodgers. It just comes down to having guys ready to play and come up big in big spots. And Seiya Suzuki didn't do that. Matt Shaw obviously didn't do that. You can question, of course, Craig Counsell's batting order. One of the few bright spots on the team in this series really is that John Birdie comes out of it batting .500 because he went 3-for-4 in game 2. Got both the starts, made the most of an opportunity. And we talk about the Dodgers being shorthanded. The Cubs are shorthanded too. They don't have Nico Horner. He was actually on with Spiegel and Holmes yesterday and was asked if he's ready to be in the opening day lineup for domestic opening day next week.
Yeah, working that way. Still got some things to check off just as far as, playing real games and more time in the field and things like that. But, everything's heading the right direction.
So Maddie Lee was on with us earlier from the Sun-Times, and she said all indications are he will be ready for opening day. I'm wondering how much of a boost to have an experienced professional hitter like Nico Horner can do to help solve some of the offensive woes, or is it one of those things where you need a whole bunch of guys just to play better than what we saw the last 2 days?
Well, if you go back to the first game where there were defensive miscues, both by Matt Shaw and then John Birdie was trying to turn a double play, and you saw how that turned into extra runs for the Dodgers, then you see where that expertise and even his defense is going to help the team. Birdie had a nice game today. You know, it goes 3-for-4. He was 3-for-3 in his first 3 at-bats. So you appreciate the offense that he brought, especially when yesterday they only managed 3 hits for the entire game. So that was an issue. But Nico Hoerner can take his time. At least they know that they've got somebody who could be a capable backup. The Dodgers are a pretty good test of that.
Yeah.
You're not going to get Roki Sasaki at his worst day again, where the Cubs had 2 chances in that 3rd inning with the bases loaded, with the heart of their lineup at the plate, and couldn't convert. That was frustrating. But when it came to seeing what could happen for Nico, we appreciate the progress update. Like, that's good to know. But as far as, like, rushing him back, I don't think it's necessary. What Craig Counsell said was right, though. I said Dansby Swanson, he advanced on the throw. So that's important to note there. But also, the Cubs are trying to make things happen. After those singles, they're trying to steal bases. They're trying to manufacture offense. But if you can't hit for extra bases and you can't hit for power, and this was a problem for them all of the first 6 weeks of the season last year, I don't care where they were playing, the slugging was not there.
You can
set yourself back so far. If the slug is inconsistent, this isn't all resting on Kyle Tucker. You're going to need that pop in Dansby Swanson's bat. Say Suzuki going 0-for-8 is not a good start to the season.
3 strikeouts in this one, and a big reason why they left 11 men on base. They were 1-for-7 with runners in scoring position.
But when you have 2 chances, too, with the bases loaded against Roki Sasaki, of course we're going to talk about it. It doesn't matter what game it is, if it's game 2 or if it's game 162. That is an opportunity that you have. You've got to make something happen there.
Yeah, to watch the biggest Kyle Tucker at bat besides the double, obviously, his first hit of the season coming late, like 9th inning late, he walked in the big spot. I mean, he's got to be able to depend on guys behind him that if he doesn't get a strike to hit, yeah, if the bases are loaded, you take the run with the walk.
And he's a threat, so that's why he's able to induce those walks, because you know what he can do with one swing of his bat. The other piece of this is he had a 3-0 count mid in the game, you know, before the double, and he decides that he's gonna swing on 3-0,
which I like for him.
I disagree. I think at that point, when you're down 3 runs, maybe you should have just taken the walk if you needed to, because you already forced one earlier.
I think depending on the situation, I'm good with Kyle Tucker if he thinks he's gonna. I mean, obviously, you have a much tighter strike zone at 3-0 of what you're going to swing at than you do in other counts. So am I saying definitely swinging a 3-0 pitch? Obviously not. But I'm saying if the pitch is that pitch that you want, if it's that cherry, I mean, that's Kyle Tucker is looking behind him and he sees Michael Bush on deck, who went 0-for-3 with 3 strikeouts.
And then the 2 pinch hitters behind him also went 0-for. So they got, I think it was, what, 2 walks out of the 2?
Well, yeah, so Bush
but
went
still,
0-for-3, 3 strikeouts
and
a walk.
This is your number 4 spot.
And Turner, he walked in his only plate appearance, and then got pinch run for by Brujan. So, look, it was a bad performance. They lost 2 games, but it was also the Dodgers. And right now, the Dodgers are a behemoth that cannot be competed with at the start of a season. They're not even unhealthy yet. It's different at the end of the season where, like, they're trying to figure out if they can patchwork some arms together to get through the playoffs. This is the beginning of the season when they're healthy.
Yeah.
Oh, but they're not even healthy because no Mookie Betts, no Freddie Freeman. And oh yeah, Otani's not even pitching yet. Can you imagine if Otani was ready to pitch and pitched in one of these games? Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
I'm genuinely concerned. Like
that's what I'm saying.
Especially against a Cubs team that is known to be streaky as a lineup.
If the Cubs had traded for Dylan Cease before the season started and Nico Hoerner was healthy, you'd still be concerned because it's the freaking Dodgers.
Yeah,
it's a different level. It's the gap between 1 and 2 is large.
You can
and I'm not calling the Cubs number 2. I'm just saying.
No, you can upper middle class your way all you want, but when you're competing against billionaires, which is the best analogy I can put it as, those are 2 different things.
Yeah, it's going up against the 1%ers because you have the nicest house in your suburban neighborhood and it's a gated community.
Meanwhile, they're on an island.
Yes. The Dodgers are on another level, and it's okay to understand that that's the situation, and therefore the Cubs need to focus on one thing and one thing only. That's winning the Central and getting into the playoffs the best position possible.
But, and then hope the Dodgers underperform.
Yes.
That's the rest of the league's hope.
Really? No.
The Dodgers don't play up to their ability.
No. If the Dodgers play to their ability, I don't see anyone beating the Dodgers this season.
They're so deep. The problem is they're so positionally deep. They're so deep at pitching. And whoever was right, 773, they say, talk about all the money with the Dodgers that you want, but the Dodgers develop players that better than anyone. You can't disagree with that either. You see what they do in these trades where if your name is attached to the Dodgers system and you're stuck, like a Michael Busch, for example, then you're automatically getting more of a pedigree in any sort of trade as well. So they're so deep that even if they had more than a typical regression out of more than the typical amount of players, they're still going to make the playoffs. Like, that's the difference. The level is so different. It's upper middle class versus billionaire when you're talking about these two teams. It's not a bad way to be.
Question from the 608. If those two games cost the playoffs, how will we feel about them playing them then? They had to play them anyway. They still have to play them.
No. I'm saying, like, there's a lot of people who are like, oh, it's only two games.
No, I got you. But I was just responding to that specific question. And also from 219, is Justin still overrated? I don't feel that he is a number one starter, a number two or three all day bona fide. Number one, not here yet. And also, how important is it when the starter only goes four innings or so? I mean, I think a lot of that is the guys aren't stretched out yet. That's just, no, we're not there yet.
It's March 19th.
Yes.
Like, for example, Roky Sasaki left after throwing 56 pitches. It was clear that the Cubs had a limit on both their starters in Imanaga and Steele because they both left before a 70th pitch was thrown. And it was when the inning ended.
Look, take your lumps early. It is early. Get through this first month of the schedule and be hanging around 500. I'm not even saying you got to be a 500 team. Just be hanging around 500 when April ends.
I think the difference is, I remember last April thinking, every question I had about the Cubs showed itself early in the season. Like, that month.
And all that does is increase your...
That month. Everything that I had a question about showed itself. And the difference this year is, if that's the case, what are you going to do about it? Like, are you going to trade at the deadline? Are you going to adjust some things in your lineup? What are you doing? I just want to know.
Craig Counsell is still highly paid as a manager, right?
Most highly paid manager in baseball.
He's got to figure it out.
Dave Roberts, does Dave Roberts just chill in the dugout? Is he just like, I love my life?
Like, I think he does love his life, first of all.
Do you remember when he spoke at the winter meetings last year? Everybody was like, oh, don't say what Shohei Ohtani's going to do. Don't even say you think you know what Shohei Ohtani's going to do. The Dave Roberts is like, no, we want Ohtani. And then everybody's like, oh, is that going to change anything? No, it didn't.
I just want to correct something you said about the highest paid manager. Because I remember Dave Roberts got an extension. He's now making $8.1 million a year. He's the highest paid manager in all
there
of baseball.
There it is. There it is.
That's a cushy job if you can get it. If you can get it.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Pat Tomasulo.
Well, look, I've had a good run.
You're the oldest. We could eliminate you. Tribute to Cyrus would go on. They'd find somebody else.
Hey, wait a minute.
Afternoons on the Score.
Look, we had a great experience. You know, the games didn't go the way we wanted to, but I think we had an experience of a lifetime.
Craig Counsell talking about the Cubs as the Cubs get ready to head back to Arizona for a week. Well, actually for 10 days for them, because they start the season against the Arizona Diamondbacks. It's a nice little cookie for them from Major League Baseball. The Dodgers start at home upon their return from Japan.
So I'm angry, or at least frustrated, with one particular player, and we'll get there a little later in the segment. But we asked listeners and callers what they were angry about, if anything, from this two-game sweep at the hands of the Dodgers in Tokyo.
Hi, Andy. You're on Spiegel and Holmes. What's on your mind?
It's Andy.
Hey, guys. Love the show. Long time, first time, etc. The thing that I'm mad about is that Shohei Ohtani home run call. That was clearly fan interference. I mean, we're talking about a fan reaching over, touching a ball over one of the best center fielders in baseball. Like, they said on the broadcast that it should have been a double. I'm not convinced that PCA doesn't make that play without fan interference.
I don't think he catch. I think that's off the wall. If I agree with you, though, Andy. I think that they were too quick to be like, oh, no, it's totally a home run. That deserved a lot more discussion than what it got.
Yeah, no, it did. I think that is legit. That is legit. And I hope that it feels good to be angry about that. I hope that, like, baseball being back allows you an opportunity to feel angry about that as opposed to other things which are larger and bigger in the world. That's the job of baseball.
Well, I mean, one of them had to do with baseball today,
we got time for that. Did you know Shohei has a nickname that means something? I didn't know this.
Growing up, he was known as Yaku Shonen, which loosely translated means baseball boy.
I had no idea. He was known as baseball boy growing up. That's adorable.
Of course.
He must have been into it.
Baseball boy.
That's right.
Well, they were telling the story of how in a high school game, he threw 99 miles per hour.
Shohei?
And that stood until Sasaki showed up at the same high school.
Did you see the Sasaki nuggets, which are delicious?
The White Sox are serving them over at 35th and Shields. I saw the whole thing.
Little ponzu sauce?
It's pretty good.
That's awesome. But like some of the Sasaki, like his feet.
So there was sake on the inside.
Oh, man. Delightful.
It's in the shake.
So if do I have to ask you guys if you can call me baseball boy?
Baseball boy.
Or is that just Shohei gets that? Like, I can't have that, right?
Don't you want to be baseball man?
That's right.
Baseball boy.
That's right. I've grown up to be baseball.
You were baseball president for a little bit.
For a short time. Short time. I guess boy would be a demotion. All right, carry on.
If you want to be baseball boy.
No, president's good.
What about bag boy? No? Shout out to bag boy.
Shout out to baseball president.
That's right.
Let's go to Ron. Hey, Ron, you're on Spiegel and Holmes.
Ron.
Hey, what's up, fellas? How you doing?
Good. We're good. What's up, man?
Good. So here's my beef. Imanaga was pitching a good game. You took him out for whatever reason. But why'd you bring in Ben Brown, who hasn't pitched in a game since last June, when you signed guys like Morgan and all these other guys you signed in an offseason? Why would you bring him in not knowing what you're going to get in the first game of the year when you're up 1-0?
Because he's really good. He's really effective and good. And the moment got to him a little bit. So, but Ben, I love seeing Ben Brown. As soon as Ben Brown stepped in, I'm like, oh, yeah, here we go. Now I was just wondering, is he just a middle closer? Is he only going to go one inning? Or is he a bulk guy? And he used him as a bulk guy. I loved that. He did that because Ben Brown is really good, and he doesn't necessarily trust Eli Morgan or Caleb Thielbar to get to Ryan Presley and Porter Hodge.
I also think that with the way that that thing is kind of structured, it's weird. So we may have seen some weird stuff over there that we might not necessarily see when the team gets back to the United States.
That's entirely possible. Entirely possible.
Let's go to the South Burbs and talk with Marvin. Hey, Marvin, you're on Spiegel and Holmes. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good.
We're good, man.
Listen, the thing that has me angry is that the Cubs lineup does not put fear in pitchers' hearts. The Dodgers lineup, even without Freddie Freeman, without Mookie Betts, there's still a level of fear that you have for that lineup. And I think that affects, that gives their pitchers confidence, and it affects the opposing pitchers like ours, like you talked about Brent Brown, coming in facing a lineup that has so much star power, so much power, quality hitters. And the Cubs have all this money. They got rid of Bellinger, but they did not put another bumper in there. There's not two people in their lineup that you actually fear. You might respect them, but you don't fear them, and that's what makes me angry.
That's good stuff, Marvin. It's Ben Brown, not Brant Brown, but forget it, he's rolling.
Oh, no!
And then Shohei Ohtani is one-man fear. Like, his existence puts fear in the hearts of entire oppositions.
Yeah, but Will Smith and Max Muncy had great at-bats.
They did, but I don't think that those guys elicit fear.
Teoscar Hernandez also.
I think
lineup is so good.
I know, but yes. But like, here's the thing. Kyle Tucker should be a guy that elicits fear. But my problem is that the second best hitter, the guy who needs to be the second best hitter on that team, was absolutely terrible in this two-game series, and that's Seiya Suzuki.
What? Hold on, Speaks.
Oh, dude.
Hold on to this. Just hold on to it.
Okay.
We're going to talk with Derek Stevens. Okay. We'll move some stuff around.
I want to talk
We've
about
got
it.
Space for you to do some of this stuff on today's show.
Okay.
We're going to get you ready for our trip in Circa, and then we're going to get back to the baseball.
Okay, because it feels good to be angry. Like a texter said, I'm angry about lineup construction, but it just feels good to be angry. That's where a lot of people are.
All right, so we're going to tell you about the trip to Circa coming up, and we will revisit some of this baseball stuff on the other side. Spiegel and Holmes here with you on The Score.
The Bernstein and Harris Show.
I'm the best around. Nothing better have a hammer.
Middays 10 till 2.
I thought this was America. Huh? Isn't this America?
It's awesome. It's something a lot of people can't really say they've done. I don't know how many countries I've pitched in now, but it's got to be getting up there. It's, you know, something I don't take lightly. It's something that means a lot to me. It's you know, I don't take any of these moments for granted. I've played baseball my whole life, and to be able to play it on a stage like this, it truly means the world to me. And, you know, to get my 500th career strikeout here in Tokyo, just something I'll never forget. It'll be something I'll, you know, tell my kids and grandkids about.
Justin Steele, the kid from Loosdale, Mississippi, not just a player, an international player, as he mentioned, getting his 500th strikeout in Tokyo. Cubs, however, come up short, 6-3 loss. They get swept in a two-game short set. The Tokyo series is now officially in the books. And to talk about that, joining us now on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline is Matty Lee, the Cubs beat writer for the Chicago Sun-Times. Download the Circa Sports app today. Good morning, evening, good overnight, Maddie. What, it's 12:26 there. Am I right on that? It's Thursday morning.
Hey, Maddie, you up?
Barely. No, I am still working, so I'm going to count it as still night.
Okay. And you're still working because the Cubs are giving you a lot to write about here over the first two games. What's your takeaway from this series? And really, it seems like a measuring stick. I know it's too early to say, you know, we have our starters fully stretched out, the team is cohesive, all that stuff. But the Dodgers are just showing you, even without a couple of future Hall of Famers and Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman, how good they are and how far removed they may be from the rest of baseball, correct?
Yeah, I think probably the most stark thing when you're looking at the contrast between these two teams is the Dodgers were just more polished. And that's even with, you know, Roky Sasaki on the mound tonight, or, you know, whenever morning, whatever time it is, tonight in Tokyo time, making his major league debut. They just felt a little more cohesive. And some of that is the Cubs went and did a lot this winter, right, to add, and the Dodgers did as well, but they already had that championship core in place, and they just added some supplemental pieces and, of course, Roky Sasaki. Whereas the Cubs, they knew that they really had to get over this hump here. They have to end this playoff. They have to get to the playoffs after not being there for the last 4 years. And so that took a lot of effort. That took a lot of pieces. And those pieces aren't quite all syncing up quite yet.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. And I appreciate you bringing up what is on their minds, which is trying to get to the playoffs. Like, that's, it's not like this is something new. You know, when a regular season begins, if you have a standard, that's what your goal is. And people, you know, they've had a good laugh at us reacting to two games against the Dodgers where there were multiple missed chances. But at the end of the day, these are regular season games. And I know the Cubs took them seriously like that as well.
Yeah, they absolutely did. Right. It's just two games. There are 160 more. Like, they have plenty of time to make up for this two-game losing streak. Like, they're not going to lose the rest just because they're technically on pace to lose every single game, right? That's when we have fun with percentages. And again, they're playing a really good team, but these do count, and it's kind of a jumping off point for the season. There's a lot of weird things going on with the schedule where they go back and they play spring training games and they have to, you know, adjust their roster in order to make it comply for, you know, the domestic regular season. So, like, those are all a little weird, and maybe you want to put an asterisk on it. But again, these are two losses that go down in the books, and it doesn't mean that this is what they're going to look like for the rest of the season, but they are looking at these two games and seeing where they came up short and seeing what they need to address over the next week before they start the regular season again.
I'm really curious and interested in what your sense is from Craig Counsell's comments, whether it was after yesterday's game, the opener, or even today's game, or even in between when the manager is made available pregame. What do you feel like his sense is of where this team is and what has to be done now in this next week before they do open up against Corbin Burns and the Arizona Diamondbacks in Arizona?
Yeah, I mean, you've talked with him. He's so even keeled, right? And, you know, just kind of, especially post-game, boils it down to the facts. And, you know, he talked a lot tonight about they didn't come up with a big hit. Yes, they had some singles. They put pressure on them. You know, they worked walks against Sasaki, but they didn't get that big hit. And, you know, that's something that we heard a lot last year. And so I think it would be natural for Cubs fans, you know, at this time of year, everyone's a little more on edge because they don't have other games to compare to. And so to feel like that is deja vu makes sense for Cubs fans. But again, we've just started. This is a new group of hitters. They'll be getting, they're expected to get Nico Horner back once we start the domestic opener. And they went out and got Kyle Tucker in order to be a guy who can really elevate this offense. And, you know, he hasn't been amazing to start the season. He had a really slow spring, and that's kind of just fine. There's going to be stretches during the season when that happens as well, and he's not going to carry the team for an entire year. But when you look at a team that isn't getting that big hit, that's not quite there, just because it happens for two games doesn't mean that everything is lost and that the whole offseason was a mistake.
No, I think we know Kyle Tucker's resume leading up to this point and what he can do. But Maddie, I like that you brought up the other piece of this, which is different. And that's the fact that the Cubs were allowed to have more players to travel to Japan. And we know that there was going to be a tough decision or two that was going to be made roster-wise. We already saw Keegan Thompson get released. That was a bit, I don't know if it's surprising, but that's a big name that people are familiar with. What do you think happens when they get back and they have to cut the roster further?
Yeah, so tell me if this all makes sense, because it's very in the weeds, and if I need to explain more, I absolutely will. But essentially, you get three extra spots. You have the full travel roster, but then you also get three extra spots that are kind of in no man's land where you don't have to make a transaction, but they're not available during the Tokyo Series game. So those are Jameson Taillon, Matt Boyd, and Nico Horner. So if anyone noticed, Nico Horner didn't go on the IL, but he wasn't in Japan. And then you had two starting pitchers who pitched in the exhibition games, but were not available in the Tokyo Series games. So really those three spots are what, that's why you know that they're going to have to make transactions, because those don't exist during the regular season. So we're expecting, as long as things continue to go well with Nico, that he'll be ready for the domestic opener. They'll have to make a move in order to put him on the active roster. And the same goes for the starting pitchers, because those two, Taillon and Boyd, will be part of the rotation. You know, of course, things can happen in the next week, but that's what we're expecting.
Do they expect Nico Horner to be ready for domestic opening day in Phoenix?
Yes, yes. That has been, all indications have pointed that direction. Of course, you know, if he hits a bump in the road over the next week or something's a little slowed, maybe, you know, that can swing. But he was looking good when we left for Tokyo. He was all set to start playing in minor league games, and everything, the last time we checked with Craig, everything was going well.
And I know it's only been two games, and you said, you know, 0-2 does not equate to leading to 0-162, even if that's how percentages work. But I got to ask you, is it too early to say Seiya Suzuki is scuffling in a slump? Because he did not look good today, Maddie. Let's be honest.
So I will say, yes, I do think that it's too early to say that he's scuffling. But there were a few swings where you saw him go back to the thing where he's clearly not on time or not picking up pitches, and he does the late all arm swing.
Right.
And that's something that we saw kind of the last time he was slumping, which now feels like forever ago, because he had such a nice stretch here recently. So, like, I definitely noticed those and definitely clocked those, but I do think it's too early to think too much from that.
I would also like to ask about what the vantage point was for you in the press when it came to Shohei Ohtani's home run. There was discussion about it possibly being fan interference. We know there was a review. We were working with limited camera angles from what we saw. What did you see?
Yeah, so from where we were sitting in the press box, it was really unclear. I honestly thought, just because, you know, we're just barely up the third baseline in the stands, essentially. From where we were sitting, I was like, did that hit further down on the wall? Obviously, that was not true. We got to see a couple replays. Hard to tell, and I think probably what it boils down to is the call on the field was that it was a home run. Really hard to overturn that. So even if they're not 100% sure when they look at the replay, like, okay, yes, it is, you need a little more to overturn that. And I would, it would have been a wild thing to watch that very Shohei Ohtani friendly crowd react to an overturned call after thinking that he hit a home run.
Yeah, the pressure was definitely on. More pressure on Gage Tater Workman because he didn't appear in the series. I thought he had a path to the big league roster, but now that Nico Horner's coming back, we just saw John Birdie go 3-for-4. He's probably going to head back to Detroit, right?
They have a couple different ways that they could go about it, right? It depends on what they want to do with their bench. That is one option for sure, in order to make room for him. And it's tough for Rule 5 guys. They're just like, the fact that you have to stick for the whole year, otherwise you're probably going to be offered back. That's a lot of pressure, and he had a fantastic spring and they really liked him. And he's a profile that they didn't have. And so they took a flyer on him and he looked really good. I think that it's going to be a hard decision. And I don't even know if they have it fully worked out yet, right? Because they tend to, you know, they know kind of what direction they're leaning. But if they don't need to make the decision now, they're certainly not going to.
And Maddie, I asked this to Megan Montemurro yesterday, and I want to ask it to you as well, because you guys got to take this trip. So what was maybe the most impressive experience you had, or something that is going to really stay with you now that you've got to go back?
Oh, that's a good question. honestly, it's all been amazing. It's been an absolutely incredible trip. And both Megan and I are actually staying a few extra days, which I'm really excited. I haven't had a day off since like February 8th. And so take my time off in Arizona or Tokyo, I will take the latter. But so far, I think one of the things that I've liked the most has been those exhibition games were really, really fun. And just seeing the MPB fans and all their chants that they had for every individual player was just something that you don't experience in the U.S. in a baseball setting, and that was really, really neat.
Maddie Lee from the Sun-Times joining us to talk about the Cubs. We appreciate your time, Maddie Lee. Enjoy that vacation in Tokyo. Take full advantage of that PTO.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Maddie.
Again, Maddie Lee, you can find her over on Twitter at Maddie_M_Lee, enjoying her time in Tokyo, as she should. If I could stay in Tokyo for a few extra days, I definitely would.